Now that Iowa and New Hampshire are behind them, what does the road ahead look like for the Democratic presidential candidates?
I think that what you're seeing is that these top-tier candidates are trying to kind of build in momentum, trying to go into that Super Tuesday where they'll have, you know, if they can get a win in South Carolina, if they can get a win in Nevada, and try to propel them into Super Tuesday where they can just keep going and gathering delegates.
And travel from China is still heavily restricted because of the coronavirus outbreak. And American museums, hotels, and retailers are bracing for a loss of Chinese tourists and the business they bring.
All of that adds a lot to the U.S. economy. And that means that everyone's saying that we're going to see a sharp drop in those numbers this year.
It's Wednesday, February 12th. I'm Charlie Turner for The Wall Street Journal. Here's what's news. Google says the European Union's antitrust enforcer didn't have legal grounds for slapping it with a multi-billion dollar fine. The search giant is in court to appeal three antitrust rulings it lost against the EU that have led to fines totaling more than $9 billion. The litigation poses a test for the EU's competition czar and the continuing probes into other tech companies such as Facebook, Apple, and Amazon for allegedly abusing their dominance to drive out smaller rivals. A verdict on the matter isn't expected until early next year. A government watchdog says the Census Bureau is behind schedule in preparing for the 2020 count, which gets underway next month. The Government Accountability Office said the Bureau had only received 2.1 million applications from people who want to work on the census as of early February. That's short of a goal of 2.5 million. The GAO also said the census is behind on setting up the online system that most Americans will use to be counted. The Wall Street Journal's Janet Adamy.
It's a problem because this is the first time the Census Bureau will ask most Americans to fill out their census forms online. GAO and other government watchdogs have been warning for years that the census was behind schedule in making this switch to the online system. And I think people took those warnings with a grain of salt. There was still, you know, a lot of time, but we're a month away from when most Americans will start getting those forms in the mail, giving them a code to go online and fill out their census forms. And the concern is, you know, if these things aren't done now, there's barely any time to finish checking them and improving these systems to make sure they work properly and to make sure they keep people's data safe and secure.
The report also found the census faces significant challenges in addressing cybersecurity weaknesses quickly. Census Director Stephen Dillingham said preparations are on budget and on target. We report that the Education Department has opened investigations into whether Harvard and Yale properly disclosed foreign funding. The two schools are part of a continuing review that has found U.S. universities failed to report at least $6.5 billion in funding from countries such as China and Saudi Arabia. Department officials have accused the schools of soliciting money from foreign governments, companies, and nationals known to be hostile to the U.S. Officials have said those countries could be looking for opportunities to steal research and spread propaganda. Mobile World Congress, one of the largest and best-known smartphone conferences, has been canceled after major tech companies dropped out of the show due to fears over the coronavirus outbreak. John Hoffman, chief executive of the show's organizer, told MarketWatch that the outbreak made it impossible to hold the event. The show was scheduled to take place in Barcelona later this month. We'll have more on the ripple effects of the coronavirus in just a few minutes. The New Hampshire Democratic primary is history, with Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders squeezing out a win over former South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg. What impact does New Hampshire, as well as the Iowa caucuses, have on the Democrats' battle to unseat Donald Trump as president? Let's bring in Chad Day, national politics reporter for The Wall Street Journal. Chad, now that the New Hampshire primary is over, where will the Democratic candidates be headed next?
Right. So the focus now turns to Nevada and South Carolina, which will hold their contests over the next few weeks. First, Nevada on February 22nd, and then South Carolina later in the month on the 29th. What you're seeing already is that last night, you know, even before the results were coming in, you saw some of the candidates start kind of looking ahead to those races. You know, Amy Klobuchar started putting up ads in Nevada, and Joe Biden, who was had a disappointing finish in New Hampshire, went ahead and left the state and went on to South Carolina, where he feels he has the best chance to kind of reset his campaign.
Looking ahead, this stands to be a fight for delegates for quite a long time, doesn't it?
It does, because, you know, these first two states just have a handful of delegates, just a small percentage of what overall they'll have to accrue to be able to get the Democratic nomination. Really, the focus right now is going to be that delegate-rich Super Tuesday, March 3rd, when 16 contests are held, including some very large ones like California and Texas. That's, you know, right now what we're seeing with the field is that, yes, you know, Pete Buttigieg and Bernie Sanders have some momentum going into the next few contests. But really, you know, early March is when you're going to kind of see, you know, will this race clarify? Will, you know, one candidate really pull ahead from the others?
Let's assess the candidates individually. I would imagine that Sanders, who's now the front runner, will have to keep the momentum going. Will that be a difficult challenge for him?
You know, Bernie Sanders faces a couple of things coming in the next contest that are a little bit of a bigger challenge for him than they were in the first two. One is that, you know, these are more diverse states. The early states that he did well in, Iowa and New Hampshire, are pretty white states. But now we're moving into states like Nevada and South Carolina that have large minority populations, large Hispanic population, large Black population. And this is really the first time, you know, in this contest where those voters will get to weigh in on the presidential nomination contest. So far, Joe Biden has been polling at the highest with those groups. And so, you know, the challenge for Sanders going into this will be, can he chip away at that and start to kind of bring in a larger coalition of voters than he has so far?
Pete Buttigieg and Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar both did much better than expected in Iowa and New Hampshire. What challenges do they face?
You know, Pete Buttigieg faces a couple of different challenges. One is that he put a lot of eggs in one basket with Iowa and New Hampshire. You know, they really ramped up their campaign operation there. And so now the challenge will become, you know, can they build up and kind of build on this momentum by going up on their ground game in Nevada and South Carolina and going into Super Tuesday? He also has been polling, you know, not even really registering at times with Black voters in the Democratic Party in national polls and also in polls in South Carolina. And so he faces another, you know, can he expand his base and appeal to those voters who maybe were reticent about him before? For Amy Klobuchar, it's that, you know, she really didn't expect to be here. And, you know, her campaign is already trying to very quickly ramp up in Nevada and try to take advantage of, you know, a stronger than thought finish in Iowa and also, you know, now a third place finish last night.
Elizabeth Warren, senator from Massachusetts, and former Vice President Joe Biden were once seen as frontrunners, but they've had a bad showing in the early contests. What is the state of their campaigns at this point, Chad?
That's a good question, and I think that they're trying to figure that out right now themselves. You know, last night you saw Elizabeth Warren's campaign, her campaign manager, release a memo that was very sharp, went after pretty much assessing all of the other campaigns and what they saw as weaknesses there, but also came out with kind of a different tone than usual you would see from a campaign, where they were talking about how they didn't actually have to start winning primaries for her to stay in the race. And so, you know, they were talking more about delegate math and trying to just accrue enough delegates to be able to stay viable for a long enough time to outlast some of their other opponents. You know, with Joe Biden, you know, he's had two poor finishes now. And I think that the campaign is banking on South Carolina to kind of reset and reorder the race. But, you know, what we've seen there is there's been some shift in polling there, whereas he was ahead for, you know, for several months and has been kind of the national front runner. Now you see Bernie Sanders in national polls going ahead of him and also some softening of support in South Carolina. So his campaign is kind of going all in on, you know, what they've called the South Carolina firewall.
Super Tuesday, March 3rd, is obviously very crucial. It's delegate rich. What role might that have on the race?
You know, that would actually, that, you know, we look at Super Tuesday as kind of a clarifying point in the race. What it will probably tell us is, you know, who has actually the ability to last in this nomination fight. And it will probably narrow the what has been a very crowded field by quite a bit. I think that what you're seeing is that these top tier candidates are trying to kind of build in momentum, trying to go into that Super Tuesday where they will have, you know, if they can get a win in South Carolina, if they can get a win in Nevada and try to propel them into Super Tuesday where they can just keep going and gathering delegates. I do think that what you'll see is that, as we saw last night with a few lower tier candidates, Andrew Yang, Michael Bennett, and then today with Deval Patrick dropping out of the race, I think that's also another narrowing point in the race.
Wall Street Journal national politics reporter Chad Day, thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me.
Chinese visitors to the U.S. have been a boon for business, adding $35 billion to the U.S. economy in 2018, according to the U.S. Travel Association. But now with travel from China restricted during the coronavirus outbreak, some businesses that rely on those tourists are already starting to feel the pinch. Wall Street Journal reporter Austin Hufford got on the line with our J.R. Whalen to discuss.
So Austin, how has the outbreak of the coronavirus affected tourism in the U.S.?
Chinese tourism in the U.S. has been a big business for a few years now. And what's happened with this new virus is that essentially many flights have been canceled. You know, very few flights between the U.S. and China are happening anymore. Second, the U.S. is just not letting in anyone who's been to China unless they're a U.S. citizen or they have a family who is a U.S. citizen.
So that's got to have an impact on hotels and airlines, things like that?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, in the first 11 months of last year, residents of mainland China made 2.7 million entries to the U.S. If you think about that, that means they're eating at restaurants, they're staying in hotels, they're going to museums, and they're flying here. All of that adds a lot to the U.S. economy. And that means is that, you know, everyone's saying is that we're going to see a sharp drop in those numbers this year. And that is not good for a number of industries.
How does the current Chinese tourism levels in the U.S. compare to those during the SARS outbreak in 2003?
So basically, when the SARS outbreak happened, there was much fewer Chinese tourists coming to the U.S. And so what that means is that a drop in Chinese tourism today is going to have a much larger impact on the U.S. economy than what happened during the SARS virus. To give us some numbers on that, in 2018, 1.5 million Chinese residents received visas to travel to the U.S. In 2003, only 250,000 received those visas. And so as you can see, it's a much bigger deal to a whole bunch of industries, whether it's amusement parks or museums or hotels or restaurants. More industries are going to see some amount of loss in business.
Among those is the cruise industry. How has that industry been affected?
As you might have heard, there's a cruise ship that's docked in Japan, and it has more than 100 people who were on that cruise ship have now been diagnosed with the virus. And everyone else on the ship is having to stay in quarantine for 14 days minimum. And so as you might imagine, there's some concern in the industry that this is going to make people less likely to book cruises. But right now, that's only a concern. We haven't actually seen data that supports that yet. But, you know, if seeing all these negative headlines about cruises is not viewed as a good thing for the industry.
And how about bus tours in the U.S.? Has that business been affected?
Yes. From what we're hearing, you know, there are various Chinese tour operators who primarily appeal to Chinese-speaking individuals from China. And they've said that, you know, they've seen orders go down substantially. They've seen cancellations. And the real fear is that one operator told me is that a lot of Chinese citizens are typically planning their summer holidays right now. And so right now is when you might be, you know, they might be choosing to book their vacation to Las Vegas or to Chicago or whatnot in June and July. They'll be making those decisions right now. And so if that doesn't happen, and it's not happening because of this virus, that means that the ramifications of this could go on for months.
What have you heard from tourist destinations outside of big cities?
Yeah, so it was really interesting. Several years ago, I was traveling in upstate New York, and I stopped at the Corning Museum of Glass. There, that they had this glass-blowing demonstration, and they had two languages that they gave it in English and in Mandarin. And ever since then, I thought about this, you know, in the years to come. And this week, when I was reporting the story, I gave them a call and asked, you know, first of all, why do you have all these tourists, these Chinese tourists coming to your museum? And they said that basically their museum is located between New York City and Niagara Falls. And so a lot of Chinese tour busts come through the area, and they've been making kind of a big effort in the last few years to try to attract these tourists.
That's a very convenient location.
Yeah, exactly. And so even though the community itself is largely English speaking, I think it's, you know, the city is over 90% white, they still offer Mandarin tours because of all these tourists. And so it's important to realize is that, you know, Chinese tourists are not just in the New York cities of the U.S., but they are increasingly traveling to other parts of the country as they go on different tours and visit different parts.
Now, even though the tourism industry is taking a hit now, could it have been a lot worse if the outbreak happened over the summer?
Yeah, I mean, that's what some of these operators have told us, is that the good thing is that it's a little bit quieter of a season right now. And so there is hope that if the virus stops growing and things kind of resolve themselves in a few months, then we might still see a robust season this summer, because as you might know, the tourism season in the summer is the most important for the industry.
That was the Wall Street Journal's Austin Hufford. And that's What's News for Wednesday afternoon. If you like our show, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Charlie Turner for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.